That is brand new music from the LA-based band Walker Brigade. New album's called If Only, and the track I played for you, Choker, wrapping up that set of music. Before the Walker Brigade, how about some 2022 music from Elvis Costello and the Imposters with Penelope Halfpenny? Or the way he says it, Penelope Halfpenny. Either way, good song. Good song. And started off the entire set with a release from this year, from 2022. From Amoeba Teen. Their new album is self-titled. And Melody Told You. Short set of music because we are approaching the top of the hour. And what happens at the top of the hour? I'm going to play more music, but you're listening to an encore presentation of the Viva La Mach radio program and playing highlights. Actually, this past hour has been basically the first hour of the program from Friday, June 3rd, 2022. And then the next hour is going to be the last hour of the program. It's going to be the actual Mach where I was, paying ode to myself. I was celebrating the fact that we recently hit the 23-year milestone here on the WRCT airway. So that's coming up in just a couple minutes. But I also want to take this time to, well, tell you two things. Well, first, I want to tell you that middle 2 hours that you're not listening to, I think I'm going to make that into a future encore presentation because it was so much fun. That middle 2 hours, what I did was I played only music from the year 1982. Songs that came out on albums from 1982, and I played like 2 hours of it. And it was such a good time. I have that recorded, and I think I will play that as an encore presentation sometime in the future. So always just keep listening to WRCT. Maybe you'll catch that. Speaking of catching something, you know, on Friday nights, no, wait, that's me. You can listen to me on Friday nights. Sunday nights, Chris Wired steps in to the station, unfolds a table, puts a little checkered tablecloth on it, pulls out a picnic basket, and he serves up this feast of melodious harmonies and harmonic melodies. On the menu, jangle pop, power pop, psychedelic, anything that feeds the mind. He calls it breakfast for dinner. It's each and every Sunday night here on 88.3 FM, starting at 11 p.m. Anyway, we've got to get to the next hour. Yeah, the next full hour is me doing a mock of the fact that I'm celebrating 23 years here at WRCT. A bunch of songs with a 23 in the title if you want to know what that means. Always appreciate you listening. You can drop me an email in the meantime. Even though it's an encore presentation, I do get emails throughout the week. WRCTrequest@gmail.com. We'll be back right after this quick message.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov.
The following program is a tribute to the late Dick Gregory, entertainer, civil rights activist, and wellness guru. Gregory died of heart failure on August 19, 2017. He was 84.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
I am the best of a half a billion, so I don't want nobody to tell me that I'm special. I know that. And these are the things that I have evolved to the point of realizing. If you ask me what is the worst shame, I would have to say a father, 10 black children, that God blessed me to create 10 gods, and at no time did I have an affair with Lillian Gregory. to create God's new life. I just rip it off to rip off. And that's not insulting. What's insulting? I never owned a car. I didn't know the year, the make, the model, the down payment, the book value, the trade-in, the insurance, the monthly notes. And when I have to sit across from you at 68 years old and realize I put more planning into owning a Jive automobile than creating God's new life, then maybe the problem starts with me. And so, but if I had to leave one word to describe me, say agitator. And if you don't know out there what that is, next time you put your dirty, wet underwear in the washing machine, take the agitator out.
Dick Gregory, comedian, civil rights activist, and spokesman for health issues. This past March, Gregory was the keynote speaker at the 14th Annual Heman Sweat Symposium on Civil Rights, held on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. In 1949, Sweat applied for admission to the UT Law School, but was denied admission on the basis of race. With the help and assistance of the NAACP, he brought legal action against the university. In the landmark case Sweat v. Painter, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that separate law school facilities could not provide a legal education equal in quality to that available at the University of Texas Law School, one of the nation's ranking law schools. In 1950, Sweat entered the University of Texas School of Law. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, comedian and civil rights activist Dick Gregory, In Black America.
The power of the God force. I was hooked to the church. The power that the most racist thug, the most wealthiest, unspiritual, multi-trillionaire pimp in me came from the same God. And I defy you, I have 10 children, to love and like 9 of my children and hate the 10th one. You violate me as a father. And so I realize now that the dope pusher and the drug addict, the same God made them both. And so I have to have his compassion for both of them as I would like for you to have for that 10th one who have done something wrong to you. And so I guess when I sit down and look at it now and realize we all got here the same way.
Dick Gregory is famous for his hunger strikes, his mobilization for social change, his Bahamian diet, his comedy career, and his anti-drug activities. He is a complex and unique man. Born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, he grew up shining shoes to help feed his family. At Sumner High School, he led a march against conditions in segregated schools and set a state record in track. As a star comedian in the early 1960s, he used biting racial satire and stunned the stereotypes of early black comics. Prompted by the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., he became a civil rights and anti-war leader, running for president in 1968 and fasting for human rights here and abroad. Recently, Gregory was in Austin, Texas for the 14th annual Heman Sweat Symposium on Civil Rights.
I didn't realize growing up that there is about 300 different things you can eat that has more calcium in it than cow's milk. I didn't realize that the number one ingredients in cow's milk is not calcium, it's called casein. Casein builds a bone structure to carry the body's weight. Cow's milk has 300 times more casein than mother's milk because cow's milk got to build a bone structure to carry a ton plus, whereas mother's milk just have to build a structure to carry a maximum of 175 pounds. Cow's milk have to double the weight of the calf within 2 to 4 weeks. Mother's milk double the weight of the baby within 8 to 9 months. What do they do? What do they make synthetically with casein out of cow's milk? They make kerosene that you burn for fuel, and they make glue. Now, we have to ask ourselves a question. Is it a coincidence that the number one milk company on the planet, Borden's Milk, just happened to make Elmer's glue? Or do somebody know something? Now, it's interesting. All the countries on this planet that have crib death use cow's milk. Where there's no crib death, where there's no cow's milk, no crib. It's the gluey substance that some babies can throw off and some can't. That when you can't break it down, it shuts the lungs down. You can't breathe. And so this is what got to me, that I'm thinking that milk is at the right hand of God. I'm not told today that a carrot that was grown in 1948, that same carrot grown in the same place today, have 200,000 nutrition units less because of the way they've raped the soil. the American people today is not aware, many of them, that the Europeans said, do not send us your genetic food. Even Garber said the baby food they make for Europe is not made out of genetically grown soybeans. Mm-hmm. The American people is not even aware. They was getting ready to go to a trade war. I mean, they said, look, we're not taking it. You're not sending it over here. Now, you can feed it to them crazy folks in America if you want to, but you're not sending it to us over here. They don't even know what damage it's going to do to the human body. They don't care. And the American people, if I was sitting on this show today with my integrity talking about gasoline or mess up your car, you'd get 10,000 calls. Mm-hmm. So something wrong with a country that call itself spiritual, that put more emphasis on the automobile than they put on the human body. And this here disclaimer on this, if this disclaimer was on a filling station, said, warning, this gasoline had been made to make trucks blow up, man, we would be outraged, demand government investigations and what have you. And so my whole thing is, after you start understanding the body and realize that your heart, you got, by this time tomorrow, in 24 hours, your heart will beat 150,000 times, pump 11,000 quarts of blood through your body in 24 hours. And the average life expectancy, your heart will pump 50 million gallons of blood through your body. They ain't got a pump on this planet that can do that. And so as I start getting into and realizing the human body, the day you and I were born, we had 62,000 miles of blood vessels. Now, I ain't talking about now. I'm talking about we just little bitty tots. Mm-hmm. Now, what is 62,000 miles of blood? If you could lay your blood vessels end to end, they'd reach around this planet Earth twice with 12,000, this planet Earth twice with 12,000 miles left over, and yet your blood make a complete cycle every 30 seconds. So your blood travels 125,000 miles a minute, and they got me believing a jet plane is fast. So when you look, now when you get into the black side of it, it gets worse. We black folks in America handle more money than any black on this planet and most white folks, other than in America. We black folks in America have more educational hours than any black on this planet and most white folks except Americans. And yet, there is no country, dirt poor, no schools, that have the death from sickness and disease that we black folks have in America. We outdie. Can you imagine? We black folks is less than 12% of America's population, and as we talk now, 87% of everybody on kidney dialysis machines in America are African Americans. There's something wrong with that picture. Black men is less than 4% of America's population. 87% of prostate cancer deaths is black men. Something wrong. If you look at young black teenage boys in America, they have more asthma deaths in 1 year than all the asthma deaths on this planet put together. Why? Because Harvard, Yale, MIT, they're not aware yet that asthma is basically dehydration. An asthma attack is the brain sending a message to squeeze the water out the lungs. So basically, 6 glasses of water would break up most asthma attacks. Well, why young black boys? Well, what do they drink? Gatorade, Kool-Aid, lemonade, and soda pop. And so when you stop and think about the stuff that could be preventable, if we start understanding the human body and then look at the stats out here, we scared of drive-by shootings. And I say to black folks, you know, when you think about drive-by shootings, people scared to come out the house in the black community. You have the number one kill in America last year was not drive-by shootings. It was 497,000 Americans died from smoking cigarettes, which is 19% of the deaths. Mm-hmm. Number two cause of death is bad diet and inactivity is 350,000, which is 14% of the death. The number three is alcohol, 150,000, which is about 6% of the death. Well, wait a minute. Say, what about firearms and illegal drugs? Well, firearms is responsible for 2%, and illegal drugs is responsible for less than 1%. So I tell black folk, why y'all in the house worried about a drive-by shooting, scared to come out, smoking your cigarettes, eating your barbecue ribs, not doing no exercise, and drinking your little wine, you participating in the top three killers on the planet. And that was basically something that can be so preventable. It's difficult now. I mean, if I told somebody, say, I'm fasting, I fast 4 days, have you checked with your doctor? Well, my doctor been dead 27 years. That's what I can't check with him. Mm-hmm. But if you ask, you go home and say, I'm going to fast, they're going to fast. And say, did you check with your doctor? People don't check with doctor before they do cocaine. They don't check with doctor before they do reefer. They don't check with doctor before they smoke cigarettes. They don't check with doctor before they stay at a party all night. Now we, not just black folks, but all Americans have a built-in self-destruct. We'll ask questions about everything except the human body. We will go to the store and buy a can of peas. And if you look at the word ingredients, there's 17 other words on there other than peas, of which 16 you can't pronounce. And we don't ask what it is.
Mr. Gregory, you gave up comedy to become a social and civil rights activist. But you said Dr. King was one of the individuals that turned the light on or brought your particular talents to what?
The movement. King, in another way. King, when the cameras wasn't around, King was still that loving person. Okay. Few blacks I know that will say one thing on camera and won't say something else when all the white folks is gone. He always talked about love. I didn't understand what he's talking about because he was in conflict with the white folks in my head. Mm-hmm. See, my hero wasn't black. My hero was John Wayne, Humphrey Bogart.
Okay.
My movie folks, they said, if you right and they wrong and they won't listen, go get them guns, boy, and blow them away. That was my whole mentality, you know. And so King came through and said just the opposite. You know, I heard folks in the Bible, but they was dead. Here's a live human being that I knew, that I could touch, I could feel. We sit and talk, who laughed at the jokes And I watched him, and that had a big influence on me. And today, I'd have never thought that I'd sit across from you and tell you that I would feel much comfortable being killed by somebody than killing somebody, or having my family killed by somebody than having them kill somebody. I never thought I would ever arrive at that. You don't arrive at that from a system with white folks. Now, a lot of folks in the civil rights movement use nonviolence as a tactic.
Mm-hmm.
I used to ask them, how can you say you're not going to slap a white boy that spit in your mama's face and kicked your pregnant wife, but you want to go to war for this maniac and kill people you don't even know? So that's not nonviolent. And then my nonviolence spread it over to the fact that I thought, should nothing be killed? So that's when I became a vegetarian, at a time when I had never heard the word vegetarian and really thought you needed to have proteins. And now I've got enough sense to know that there's a lot of protein in a steak, but cows don't eat steak. And the strongest three animals in the jungle, the gorilla, the elephant, the rhinoceros, don't eat no meat. As a matter of fact, the animals we eat don't eat meat. And if you brought them some animal, most folks would, you know, and said, hey, here's... So anyway, I'm saying that as I grew into it slowly, you know, it's like if you could feel your hair grow, you'd probably go crazy. You can't. So that's how I evolved. And then one day, I got out of show business, not because of the civil rights movement. I got out of show business because I said, God has blessed me to give me one of the funniest, wittiest minds in the history of the planet. In France, at the Sorbonne, they teach a class in Dick Gregory humor. They asked me once, how come they don't teach a class of Dick Gregory humor in America? If I was from Paris, y'all wouldn't be teaching a class. You know, get off my back. And I appreciate that talent from God. Let me tell you why. Out of all the things on this planet that make sound, trees, they can listen to trees now. When you cut it, they can hear them scream. Out of all the things that move, out of all the things that have life and breath, we humans are the only thing can laugh and giggle and smile and to be blessed by the God force, man, to help facilitate that. What a blessing. But then one day I said, I'm not going to use this raw naked talent that God gave me to entice people to drink. And so at that point, I decided that I wouldn't work no place that served alcohol. Remember now, most places serve alcohol now with entertainment's out of business. You had to go to the large venues. But back then, that didn't exist. You couldn't go to the stadiums and to the places where. And see, when you came into my nightclub, and I'm making $25,000 a week, and you had to pay that tab, it's hard for you to sit there, and when they got a two or three drink menu, you're going to drink soda pop. Because if you go in and drink, if you order a rum, the Coke come free, you know. And so that's the part that made me decide in 73 that I would no longer work venues that served alcohol.
And you talk about that raw, God-given talent. Is there a comparison to some of the comedians that we have today? Some will say they use vulgar for vulgar's sake. Give us an idea.
America's a vulgar country.
Exactly.
America's a vulgar country. America.
So why as we as citizens are upset when we hear comedians use language that
because
we
put filthy stuff on when black folks do it, but white comics they don't.
Okay. Lenny Bruce.
Well, let me just back up. The three comic genius that's ever been produced in the history of this country. First is Mark Twain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, You shouldn't mention nobody else the same year you mentioned Mark Twain. That's how far out there he was. He done some stuff on Christianity that cannot be released till 500 years after he dead. Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor, okay? Now, when you listen to Richard Pryor, you see a difference. Now, I blame Richard Pryor for messing up the black comics because, you see, Red Fox is a fantastic mind, funny, but nobody brought his records out till after the Good Christians left. When Richard Pryor came through, we heard his genius and didn't hear his profanity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, unbeknown to the layperson, Richard never used profanity as a punchline. You could go and bleep all the profanity out of Richard's stuff. His genius is still there. But now, my five-year-old child, because they was in the living room when we brought Richard Pryor's record out, which not Red Fox, because we was locked in Richard's genius, we didn't hear the profanity. The child heard the profanity. Now, 15 years later, that child is 20, want to be a comic, they give us profanity, and don't tell them nothing because you didn't say nothing. You brought Richard Pryor in the house. They just didn't hear, because why should a child? There is no such thing as a genius to a child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it was Richard Pryor. We heard the genius. A genius compared to what? That child can't compare Richard Pryor to nothing. And so, but I'm a master. I know how filthy white comics, they don't give them a Def Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did that little Richard Simmons, got nerve to say, thank God at the end, put that filth on. Mm-hmm. And if you and I were white from Australia and saw that and had no contact with black folks, okay,
mm-hmm.
what do you think? Now, if you and I, through a gift of God, could produce the greatest opera in the history of every week, okay, HBO wouldn't have a place for it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the crazy bit. I will always believe that Stephen King, when he was hit by that car, that was attempt murder. And I will always believe when Stephen King said he will never write again,
mm-hmm.
that's because they missed killing him and they can't put that gun. You see the movie The Green Mile?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me tell you what Stephen King did. He took a mentally retarded, the guy's name in The Green Mile. Now, I usually, it's so long now,
mm-hmm.
but normally I wouldn't discuss this before people get to see it. The black guy's name was John Coffey. Those initials is J.C. Stephen King took a mentally retarded black man and made him Jesus Christ, and that's a violation for Du Bois. The two people that got the electric chair ahead of him, those was the two people on the cross. The Indian guy that went to electric chair said to Tom Hanks, when you get to heaven, will you remember me? That was the thief that said to Christ, he said to Tom Hanks, if I repent now, will I be forgiven?
Right.
The white woman that he went in the house and touched her mouth and took the demons out, that was Mary Magdalene in the Bible. When the last thing Jesus Christ said on the cross is, now I join my Father in heaven. So that's when you saw the black guy, John Coffey, looking at the Fred Astaire movie. I'm in heaven. And Tom Hanks played two people. He was Pontius Pilate when he said to the black guy, I can let you out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I can open the door. And then the last thing, he was Judah when he came up and he touched his hand.
Yeah.
And so the two girls that he couldn't bring back, that was Lazarus. That was the problem that Jesus had. So word for word, he ran that whole thing while these black folks are still letting him be portrayed. Here's a white boy to take a mentally retarded black man and make him Jesus. And here's Richard Simmons that defiles the black woman, the whole black consciousness. And it ain't bad. See, we complained about Rochester. Not Rochester, Amos and Andy.
Amos and Andy.
Well, you wouldn't complain now because you got people like you. We got people that's anchoring the news. We got so, but there was a time when nobody saw nothing but that one.
But Amos
piece.
And Andy.
And so there, and so I have no problem if a man want to do the most perverted, degenerate sex thing you want to do between two consenting people in a room. But why should this be on TV? Why should this be out there? And if you're going to put it out there, how come you portraying me as doing it and nobody else being portraying as doing it and black folks is part of that? And so you got a bunch of comics, the black comics, that you and I don't know, that's probably just as brilliant as Richard, but where's their room for them?
Okay.
Where's their room for them? You know, and so, you know, and I still haven't decided how Richard got sick. You know, all the people out here doing cocaine and drugs that don't end up like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see, the one beautiful thing about real white folks, they never told Muhammad Ali they would kill him. They said, we're going to shut your mouth. And they did. Yeah. You know, and I ain't about to believe. But I know Ali. I work with him nutrition-wise. Ali never got hit in the head. So why are you going to tell me he got punk and getting hit in the head? Janet Reno got punk. She's never been hit in her head. Okay, so don't, I ain't buying none of that. And so when you stop and think about the comics today, black and white, you know, the interesting thing is that old hard, old white boy Click got knocked out to Bob Hope and all them, all them Joey Bishop them there, because them young white comics came through there, boy, the Robin Williams and them came through there and just changed the whole complex. They're not mother-in-law jokes no more. They're not the woman gets the butt of the joke. They're not jokes about sex no more, you know. And so it's brilliant, man. It's,
you've had a crusade back in, I think, 97, Christmas Eve, concerning your concerns around Secretary of Commerce, Ron Brown's
death. I had some white folks that embarrassed me. There was some white folks that worked for the Armed Force Institute of Pathology. One of them was one rank from becoming a general. They performed the autopsy on Ron Brown and saw the bullet hole in his head and went public with it. What embarrassed me is I don't know if I had a military mentality and been in the military 20 years and my next rank's a general, if a white Secretary of State got shot in the head and I had to do the autopsy, would I worry about telling anybody? He did, over a brother. What he did, he brought me the pictures. What I'm going to show you is Ron Brown laying on the ground. Now, remember, they told us Ron Brown's plane hit the mountain, exploded. They said, well, his body was so torn apart, they asked his wife to cremate the parts that they brought back, and the only way they could identify him by his fingerprints. That picture you're looking at, there's not one bone broken. There's not one piece of blood you see. He's laying on the ground in a hole, and there's a picture of the back of his head. That's that bullet hole in the back of his head. Well, again, I'm saying, can I get these pictures? And the New York Times can't get them? And so I never believed from day one what they told us, because when they told us about the weather, I called the guy who's the editor of Aviation Weekly the next day and asked what was the weather like, and said it was beautiful. Matter of fact, the week later, his book came out and said it wasn't no bad weather that day. The final report had come out now, and they admit that it wasn't no bad weather. The plane he was on did have a black box. Matter of fact, that Kuwaitan who found that black box, they found him dead. Two bullets in the head, they call it suicide. Two bullets in the head, right? So what happened was the only way we could get that out was to go to the Armed Force Institute of Pathology on Christmas Eve when there ain't no news. All the serious people's gone for the vacation. And we put crime tape around the building, the entrance. And then we stretched it across the street and blocked the traffic, the bus, so they could force me to be arrested. And then I stayed in jail during the Christmas holidays. And that's the only way it broke. So that's the first time it broke in the straight papers. When I came out, they had reached the family. The daughter who ended up writing a book, his daughter, and I hope I could never produce a child that would be as disrespectful to my death as his daughter was. I don't care, Fred. See, I'd rather have a child of mine dead than a Fred. She said in the end of her book, there's a lot of questions been raised. And she didn't call my name, but I know she's talking about me, about was my daddy assassinated, murdered, or was it an accident? Well, it don't make no difference. Nothing could bring him back now. And the fear of knowing that them thugs out there can't do nothing to me. If I thought for 1 minute the God I pray to every day couldn't protect me against filth and slime, and the CIA and the FBI, I mean, they do stuff in this country that would make Hitler blush. And I'm not just talking to, you know, about black folks. When I look at the Rap Brown piece the other day, if Rap Brown did that, I did it. I mean, see, unbeknown to most folks, Rap Brown was the mightiest black power voice in the history of the planet. They framed him in New York so they could kill him. They say he stole, he had some hot washes, shot him, shot him 15 times, hit him 8 times, but he didn't die. So he went to Attica to jail with William Kunstler, his lawyer. William Kunstler's the same boy that represented Jack Ruby, so you don't have to be too much government agent to be that, right? When Rap Brown was in Attica, they gave him an lobotomy. They went in his brain and shut that down. That's why when he got out, He just docile and opened up a confectionery in Atlanta selling penny candy to children. 3 years ago, they tried to frame him and had a brother say he shot him, and then eventually the brother rescinded it. What they said when the story broke, that in the West End where he lived, 42 homicides unsolved, and they think he had something to do with it. Well, wait a minute. Man, y'all didn't have that kind of unsolved with the Atlanta murders. What's going on there? So now, if you go back to the night of the shooting, they never said Rap Brown did it. They said they was looking to question him because they was trying to serve a warrant on him. And they made you believe it was a violent crime. But when I get the warrant, we find out it was for a nonviolent crime. They served it at 10:30. How do you have a business that you in every day and I bring you a warrant at 10:30 at night? They said it happened in front of the store. It didn't. It happened away from the store and not around nobody that was with him. What they said the first night is whoever did it, because they didn't know at that time both of them wasn't going to die, the cops. Mm-hmm. They said that one of them had been shot. They'd fallen the blood. They sent for the dogs. The deputy that was wounded, he said 8 days ago that the person that killed his partner and shot him, he know he shot him in the stomach. Rap Brown I shot. And so when you look at these, the conflict of what comes back, under the Freedom of Information Act, they never knew that certain stuff would come out. We able to get that. And if you look across the top, you see the date up there says urgent. What's the date there? 11-17-63. That's 5 days before Kennedy was shot.
This has been a tribute to the late Dick Gregory, who died on August 19, 2017. We will include our conversation on next week's program. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Also, you can listen to a special collection of In Black America programs at American Archive of Public Broadcasting. That's americanarchives.org. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.
The following program is the conclusion to a tribute to the late Dick Gregory, entertainer, civil rights activist, and wellness guru. Gregory died of heart failure on August 19, 2017. He was 84.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Peace to that whole black voice, man. It's the only voice that's honest in America today. And that's basically because that while the white racist power structure was looking at everything, they underestimated black radio because at one time it wasn't nothing but hooping and hollering and playing the next Shake Your Booty record. And then all at once things started changing, new people started coming in. And they never realized they would have black voices like you or Tom John or the whole Kathy Hughes piece. And it's kind of interesting. See, black radio have to be like the black Muslims. Ain't no way in the world the way the system go after them they could ever be dealing in drugs.
Right.
And so black radio can never violate. They'd be off in the morning.
In the morning.
And so consequently, I've always felt that money is not power and education is not power, but information is power. So if you give me bad information, I got bad power. The problem in America, which makes your voice so important.
Dick Gregory, comedian, civil rights activist, and spokesman for health issues. This past March, Gregory was the keynote speaker at the 14th annual Heman Sweat Symposium on Civil Rights, held on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. In 1949, Sweat applied for admission to the UT Law School, but was denied admission on the basis of race. With the help and assistance of the NAACP, he brought legal action against the university. In the landmark case Sweat v. Painter, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that separate law school facilities could not provide a legal education equal in quality to that available at the University of Texas Law School, one of the nation's ranking law schools. In 1950, Sweat entered the University of Texas School of Law. I'm John L. Hansen, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, comedian and civil rights activist Dick Gregory, Part 2, In Black America.
For years, I didn't know Time magazine, and New York Times had a problem because no one that I knew was ever in that. And then when the civil rights movement hit, we would see one thing happen and then see something else go down. I didn't understand the power of white folks because the little low-level white folks I've been around, and one of the things would make white folks mad, and I don't blame them. See, most black folks is mad at the wrong white folks. See, the white folks we mad at couldn't help us if they liked us. Matter of fact, they'll kill them on the way to get me and you. But we don't know nothing but that low-level, hateful, nasty, ungodly, hate himself and his wife, white boy. And as long as we think, like I did for years, that was the real white boy. I remember we used to make statements, redneck, ignorant, cracker. Well, how dumb do we have to be to realize it can't no reading, no writing, no educated white boy determined policies for America.
Famous for his hunger strikes, his mobilization for social change, his Bahamian diet, his comedy career, and his anti-drug activities, Dick Gregory is a unique and complex man. Born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, he grew up shining shoes to help feed his family. At Sumner High School, he led a march against conditions in segregated schools and set a state record in track. As a star comedian in the early 1960s, he used biting racial satire and shunned the stereotypes of early black comics. Prompted by the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., he became a civil rights activist and anti-war leader, running for president in 1968 and fasting for human rights both here and abroad. On today's program, we conclude our conversation with Dick Gregory.
When you have AOL and Time Warner make a deal, now this is communication. That's all you heard that day. Jane Fonda's stock in 24 hours, just the Time Warner, did, I think, $20 million. And then the next 3 days, it lost $30 billion because they did it with paper money and pulled real money out. And so when you stop and think about, we, on the Kathy Hughes station, the second, third day after the O.J. fiasco.
And this is the one in Washington?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had got a peep at the autopsy. I found out later, and that's the power of God is incredible. I found out later that the Russian spy satellite just happened to have been over the West Coast, so they filmed the whole thing. Sent it to the State Department and never got a response back. You know, it's kind of interesting when we have a thing called whisper helicopters. And for those of you who don't know, the whisper helicopter, you can't hear it. 10,000 of us can be in your yard for a cookout. And the whisper helicopter come by, and they can come down and kill us all. Nobody heard except the dog. That's why the O.J. dog was acting a fool and nobody else heard nothing. It was the whisper helicopters. Now, this is what we do. 5 years later, then white folk come out. I knew Waco from the first day.
But the outcome was...
See, most folks didn't know that Waco was Seventh-day Adventist. They played him off of some old radical group. They've been in 40 years. And when David Koresh kicked that other thug out, found he was making crack for the government. You see, first, how can I be stupid enough to believe that you would go and buy $400,000 Rolls Royce and reduce them to $1,500 Chevys? How can I be stupid enough you're going to take expensive cocaine and reduce it down to some cheap something that poor folk can afford? That's something wrong with that. And so consequently, he was going to do an interview with the woman from the Waco paper at 8 o'clock that morning. The government made the raid at 7. Now, we got to ask a question. You celebrate your birthday on the eve, just
right.
People who don't know Universal Order.
Mm-hmm.
It was 24 hours before I came out when the party started. Christmas Eve party, New Year's Eve party.
Mm-hmm.
We burnt Waco down on Hitler's eve of his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, birthday's the 20th, we burn it down on the 19th. 55 days, standoff, lying, saying that. Then when the records came out, they said, oh, no, we made a mistake. This wasn't happening to them children. But you etch into the memory bank of people every day. And nobody stops and say, if the United States military can go to a foreign country they never been in before and take our tanks and our heavy equipment and build roads and highways within 24 hours, how come we didn't dig a tunnel under that place and slide under and put some gas in there and put them to sleep? What's that about? Okay. And so when you start looking and, uh-huh. and seeing, and so we were able to say things on black radio that would never be permitted on white neighborhood because of the control. The vicious control, the evilness of the little Cuban boy. Who knows when that fiasco will end, but there's certain questions that have to be asked. See, I never trusted Castro. I'm one of the few liberal-minded, lay my life down for human rights because 98% of Castro's Air Force is white Cubans and 98% of Castro's army is black Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba's 72% black Cubans. That's not reflected in Miami, so why did he just let the light ones come so America wouldn't? But see, we forget, America pays Castro $500 million. I'm going to repeat this twice. $500 million every month Castro gets a check, and if these rednecks found that out, they'd be out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to be too smart. One of the largest naval bases in the world is Guantanamo Base.
Okay, right.
Now, how do I put my base on my enemy territory, and how did my enemy let me keep it there? Something wrong with that picture, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something's wrong.
For those that aren't familiar, and I'm speaking to this younger generation, this new generation, give us an idea of what was like for Dick Gregory growing up in St. Louis.
It wasn't as hard then as it is now because
okay.
we was ignorant.
Okay.
See, if you're ignorant to what's happening, I never knew anything about I was supposed to go to certain schools.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up inspiring to be a streetcar conductor because black folk couldn't drive streetcars.
Okay.
Think about it. What? And at that time, all the streetcar drivers was white. Only did the bus drivers, streetcar drivers change after the violence after it became a bad job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they still controlled the union. So if you take Chicago, which is 99% black driver, and the union's 100% controlled, so all they got to do is make a deal with Daley, and then black folks never get no benefits. That's
mm-hmm.
what we see. So it's a new game to change. But I grew up seeing bad things.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, I knew who the cop was. Black cop couldn't arrest a white murderer. In St. Louis, we had two fire stations, the black fire station, the white fire station, two hospitals, City Hospital number one, City Hospital number two. So it was,
uh-huh.
we couldn't eat in white restaurants. We couldn't go to a store and try on a pair of shoes. You just have to order it, and they threw your money and your change back out. You couldn't
uh-huh.
try on a hat. You couldn't try on a dress. See, I didn't know about black folks sit in the balcony and white folks sit down. We didn't have white movies you could go to. So to sit in the balcony in the black movie, you had to know somebody,
right.
man. That was high class. So when I get to Southern Illinois University and up in the balcony, man, I'm saying they let me. See, I set the world's record in the high school mile.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get credit for it because I had a nigga. But I thought I was sitting up there because I was Dick Gregory. I didn't know that's what they. And so consequently, growing up black then, it wasn't too much you inspired for. One of the interesting things that I can reach back that most of your black business people and the people that was talked about education were Republicans. They weren't this new kind of insulting Negro that we have now, the Clarence Thomas type Negro, who, by the way, Clarence Thomas was a Black Panther lieutenant when he was a...
Uh-huh.
He just know how to trick white folks, and white folks is silly enough to be tricked and go for that okey-doke. But somewhere... And see, I blame black women on Clarence Thomas type Negroes because 98% of them are black. Wide nose, big jaws, big lips, kinky hair, and the sister wouldn't go to the prom with them. And so
mm-hmm.
they get mad at all black folks, mad white women, hate us all, so sisters, give us a break, please. And so consequently what happens is you have Jackie Robinson was a Republican. Mm-hmm. Jesse Owens was a Republican. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King's family were Republicans. And so this new type of Republican that comes during the time and say what white folks want to hear, that vicious one, the one who don't know God, thinking they do, they feel comfortable with that one. But it's funny, you don't hear them type of Negroes talk out when white folks said the other day that 90% of the women get strip searched in airports is black women, and then the day after that, they bust Federal Express 130 million pounds of marijuana while they watching the sister. But you don't hear that voice. When they do a survey, white folks, and say that a black man with a doctor's degree is more likely not to get a loan than a white boy that dropped out of grade school, you don't hear from them. And so I came up where there was a different type of a black Republican that had integrity. And so you was locked in a vicious system that you didn't know any different. You didn't know any better. And so I wouldn't expect, I have 10 children, I wouldn't expect my children to even be able to relate with mm-hmm. that. The biggest horror I had is back then nobody carried me back past slavery to who I was.
Okay.
They carried me to Negro history. We hear black folks now talking about Negro history. You don't hear them to talk about the black folks that they forgot to put in the history book. Well, you're dealing with a racist system. Why wouldn't you? I tell black folks, man, if you got folks cheat on their old lady and then go home and lie, what do you think this boy doing? He's trying to cheat on the whole world. Mm-hmm. But my history go back past slavery. Nobody told me that the strongest two forces in the history of America has always been the black woman and the black church. Mm-hmm. That's why both of them are under attack. They never blew up a black crack house or burnt mm-hmm. down a black hoe house mm-hmm. for the black church. And the black woman, my God, this country never would have survived without that mm-hmm. force. When I think about the hurricane season, and it's kind of interesting because I tell people there's no way I know this, and top meteorologists don't know this. Mm-hmm. They just don't talk about it. Hurricanes, not hiscanes, hurricanes, mm-hmm. named after, that's the spirit of the black woman. See, all hurricanes start in West Africa at the very part that the slaves was put on the ship. It don't start 10 miles from there or in the vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
All hurricanes stay on the water and follow the same trail that the slave ship followed. No slave was offloaded the ship until it got to the Caribbean. No hurricane jumps above water until it gets to the Caribbean. It will hit this country and come all the way up the East Coast, all the way to Maine. Canada's right across the street from Maine, and Canada's never had a hurricane because Canada's never done to black women what America have. And one day when that black sister really understand what her spirit is about, mm-hmm. she changed this whole, the whole piece. And so you look at then and now, when you see, I was brought up to believe that if you could just get around an educated white boy,
uh-huh.
the Harvards and the Yales. And I didn't realize that back when I was a child, Harvard had a quota on black folks, and if you was as black as me and you, you couldn't get in Harvard. Uh-huh. You know, I tell people, when you go to these schools, take out the liberal ones that you, take out their yearbook, go 150, go where Clarence Thomas went to school, Colgate. Go back there and get the yearbook, 100 years old, see if you saw anything but Adam Clayton Powell type Negroes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, there was no room for black folks then, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so consequently, what happened as you grew up with this mentality of who you was from slavery, but not back before slavery. So, for instance, young folks today, there's more lies that's told to them by the establishment now, because as you get free and the consciousness opens up, you know, I wouldn't have dared asked a question of my mother because of ignorance of if Easter and Good Friday represent the crucifixion of Christ, which I don't have no problem with that. I have a problem with one year coming in April, another year coming in March, because you can't be killed in two different months. Well, I got enough sense now to know that Easter is determined. And then the pagans were celebrating Christmas, Easter, 3,000 years before Christ was born. And now I realize that Easter is always the first Monday after the first new moon, after the first full moon, after mm-hmm. the spring equinox. So then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday on your fingers. Yeah. They told me 3 days, but they kept giving it to me on the second day.
Mm-hmm.
So this cannot happen no more. And so when you look at where we are, it's kind of interesting, your name. Somebody brought me some information once, And I decided that black radio, we could get it out. America's birthday is July the 4th, 1776. But George Washington didn't become president to 89 because there was 8 black presidents before him, and the first one was John Hanson. So on the Kathy Hughes radio station, we put it out there that John Hanson was the first president.
And it's today as we record this program.
It's
John Hanson Day.
Today. Yeah. Well, see, well, let me. I'm gonna show you more than that, and I'll give you these documents. Okay. It's John Hanson Day where?
In Maryland. They're celebrating it today.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, have you ever been to Maryland?
Yes.
You been on Highway 50?
Yes.
The John Hanson Highway.
John Hanson Highway.
Now let's ask the question: what did a black man do to get a highway named after him? They don't have highway named after black folks in Africa.
Right.
What did he do? So now, after we get it out there, and we do the Stevie Wonder Station and WVO in Chicago, here's the way a white racist system answers us, and it's very interesting. If you look at that website there, if you punch that up, here's a come off. What's that headline say? What's that say?
George Washington, our 9th president.
Oh, see? Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing about that, they would tell you that George Washington was the 9th president. They'd tell you Hanson was the first, but they don't tell you Hanson was a black man.
They certainly don't.
Now, if you get the $2 bill, you ever looked at the left side of the $2 bill, the black man sitting in the chair?
Right.
That's John Hanson. Okay? Now, this is interesting, and this is the power of black radio. What's the date on that paper, and what paper is that?
It's August 13th, 1998, Washington Post.
And it says everybody knows what?
Everybody knows George Washington was the first president.
Over here says everybody what?
Everyone is wrong.
Keep after that. What's after that?
John Hanson was elected president 7 years before
Washington.
Now,
think about the power of black. Who would have ever thought one of the major white papers on this planet would be forced because of black radio? The trick is, right now, they don't have to say he was a black man. That's how they get around it. But just the fact that it's out there that, you know, and I tell folks when y'all celebrate Thanksgiving this year, you know, celebrate it right. Here's the Thanksgiving Proclamation. What does that say there at the top?
Continental Congress. Thanksgiving Proclamation, 1782.
Signed by who?
Signed by John Hanson,
what's his
president,
title?
And Charles Thompson, secretary.
You see, and the reason I bring this up is I get copies of this and give it to you since some kind of way you connected. You know, you got presidential blood in you. You see, some kind of way when we understand when the pilgrims got here. You see, when the Mayflower got here, he didn't, that boy didn't make no mistake. You remember, he had maps of the New World. So he wasn't thought he was going to Calcutta. You see, the trick is, if I say I lost my mind, that's a sympathetic thing. See, once I lose my mind, whoever I kill, I can't get the lecture chair. If I say child is lost, when you say lost, so they put the word loss first. And then by the time you deal with loss as a child, you don't deal with what he did with the Indians and stole the country and the whole scene. But when he got here, the Moors was already here.
Right.
And so when the 13 colonies was put together, that was put together under the direction of the Moors. The Moors had so much power. Now, remember, the Moors came out of Spain by way of Morocco. So when the 13 colonies was put together, the first treaty the 13 colonies America had with anybody in the world was Morocco because of the influence that the Moors had. Now, the Moroccan flag was a white flag with a red cherry on it. When Washington became president, he broke the treaty with Morocco. That was the code where George Washington chopped the cherry tree down. So if you don't understand the codes and the system, we won't know who we are otherwise. But there's a spirit inside of us. If we be quiet and listen, we can see that dignity and feel that gentle peace and know that I'm not controlled by a white racist system. You see, white racist people don't bother me. Every black I know is hip enough to make a white racist redneck cracker like them. It's a white racist system that have no mother, no conscience, no God, and which I'm part of. It's in the mind. And so when you ask what I was then and now, we knew what was going on in the black community. We don't today unless it's negative. For instance, my baby son, financial analyst for the city of New York, little young punk, if there's 13 billion people on the planet, he's between 1 and 3. Mm-hmm. Now, he can't tell them white folks how to spend $34 billion, but they can't touch it till Johansson analyzes it. Boy ain't combed his hair in 19 years, mm-hmm. okay? But so now, I just happen to know that because he's my son. Mm-hmm. But how many of us have people, we stories we can tell like this that we 60 Minutes don't tell about? I got a daughter that worked for one of the major Fortune 500 companies. And every day she determined how many white boys going to be fired. And I said, well, dear, you come from a family of human rights. Why don't you teach them? She said, Dad, they're just too dumb. Who would have ever thought, okay, when I was a little boy, that a little quiet, peaceful black woman, okay, would be in a position to tell white boys you can't work here no more. I mean, big time, she do $3 million bonuses every year. Mm-hmm. Went to London School of Economics, got her master's and her doctor's degree. Who, you understand what I'm saying? But if that wasn't my daughter, she got a doctor's degree in sex harassment at the workplace, which means if she came in to testify for you today, they can't bring nobody else in because she's the only recognized authority. Well, if that wasn't my daughter, I wouldn't know that. And so I'm saying, how many others can we multiply like this? And this is why South Carolina got to bring the flag down. That company my daughter worked for wouldn't dare go to South Carolina to insult her as important as she is to that company. When you look at all the black folks, Maytag run by a black brother, they going, and so this is why there's a whole big difference today that's totally different. And the Clarence Thomas will never get his picture on a stamp, but Malcolm X did. Yeah. You see, in this white boy's mad as madness, he still understands beauty.
Throughout your life, you've always been concerned and conscious about health and diet.
No, we have to change that. I haven't been. There was a time.
There was a time, okay.
I was a fifth. Let me say this now, let you say. I was a fifth of scotch a day, four packs of cigarettes a day. You know, my top weight was 365 pounds.
Right, okay.
I mean, if someone would have told me I sit across you today, today is my 40th day of a water fast. Okay. If somebody would have told me that then, I'd say, man, what kind of drugs are you on? Now, go back and fetch one to change that.
Well, say
I wish I could say that.
1970.
Yes.
Let's go back to 1970.
Now we got it. Yes.
Why has that been such a rallying cry and such a burning desire for you to get that message across?
Because the things that killed black folks and was killing me, the Ku Klux Klan didn't give it to me. The White Citizen Council didn't give it to me. My mother, my school, my church, my government. And I'm outraged that I can go through grade school, high school, and college and know that one of the worst things you can put in a human body is cow's milk. Mm-hmm. That no one, the worst thing, the third number one killer on the planet is white refined sugar. When I realized that it wasn't a Ku Klux Klan or nigger hating white folks that injected syphilis into 600 black men in Tuskegee, there was the United States Bureau of Health with the aid of some of the top colleges, research, medical centers in this country. And then when we caught them, we messed up and let them write the protocol. And to this day, not even black folks have asked this question I'm asked now. If you inject syphilis into 600 black men, what about my black woman that lived with him? That was his girlfriend, his wife. And up until this day, when the president brought the brothers to the White House, to this day, nobody has ever said, you can't give it to my man without giving it to my woman. Mm-hmm. And so when I sit around and look at what they've done to my health, I'm going to hold something up. That's Crest toothpaste. If you look at the back where I put a little sign say do not what? What does that say? Do not swallow. Mm-hmm. Then you got to ask, what do they put in this toothpaste that is so poison they have to put a disclaimer on to say do not swallow? Now down at the bottom, if you do swallow, what's that last sentence say? Contact who?
Seek professional health poison control center.
Now wait a minute now. Now think about this. That's not on rat poison, brother. Listen. The stuff that's in toothpaste is so poison that an ordinary medical doctor can't help you. You got to contact the Poison Control Center. And those of you that out there that's listening, go to the toilet and look at your toothpaste. And it's on there. Mm-hmm. We know that military intelligence was in Memphis when King was killed. Mm-hmm. We knew it from interviews. We knew it from military intelligence. This is the first document we able to get our hands on that says... they were there that come from the general of military intelligence. After 30 years, it says, look back at the date. They were there from March
28th through April 12th,
1968. Now, wait a minute. See, you couldn't be running surveillance every day there and not pick up not only King being killed, but who killed him. That's what makes that so important. This is the first document we have from military intelligence that say he was there. And so, you know, just thank God there's a God and things. You know, one of the things that got declassified under Freedom of Information Act, my poor grandma, I'm glad she's not with us. Gene Dixon, world-renowned psychic. Do you know right before Christmas of last year, they had to declassify information under Freedom of Information Act, and Gene Dixon was a pawn of the FBI? And like 18 months before Kennedy was hit, when she put in her column, JFK had to be careful in Dallas. We know now that Hoover gave that to her.
Now, this is interesting. First item in this particular report, March 28th, 1968, 10:2200 hours, Dr. King arrives in Memphis, Tennessee to lead a march in downtown Memphis.
That is, from the time he was there to the time he was killed, they followed him.
This has been a tribute to the late Dick Gregory, who died on August 19, 2017. He was 84. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Also, you can listen to a special collection of In Black America programs at American Archive of Public Broadcasting. That's AmericanArchives.org. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm John L. Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.
And you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
What if the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which screening test is right for you. Learn more from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at getscreened.org.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
As we talk about great black music from the ancient to the future, we look at Afrobeats this week, and hopefully a lot of you will get an education about the musics, not just the music, but the musics that has evolved so much since the 60s and 70s.
We'll be right back. The term Afrobeat is describing a particular type of music. It came from London. London caught up with Nigerian music before USA. London has good media platform. They say something, they stick to it, the whole world catches it. One thing I will say, all Nigerian music are not Afrobeat.
I like to call my genre of music Afropolitan. For me, it's a mix of high life, Afrobeat, and R&B and pop.
I've always wanted to give a platform to the African artists. I'm a Nigerian myself, so I think it's really important. I'm very interested in genres of music that people in my industry sometimes overlook because they feel that it's not commercial.
I'm glad that it's happening during my lifetime where African music is celebrated, Nigerian music is celebrated. Growing up, my parents used to take me out. So I got busy by listening to their records. Listening to Dolly Parton, African music, Sonia Adey, South African music, Celine Dion, well, the list is endless. And that way I was learning unknowingly how to sing. I dropped my first single titled Ibadi and everyone was blown away. People started saying, oh, this is Afro House, we love it. People started calling me the queen of Afro House and I'm like, I like that title, I'm going to adopt it. I'm not an Afrobeat artist, and my root genre of music is Afro House. Even though I still tend towards other genre of music, like R&B, traditional music, and even the Afrobeat that was created by Fela Kuti. Afro House is a fusion of African music. There's the African influences in terms of the beat and my vocals. I love to sing in Yoruba language. Music is a universal language. More than ever, I believe that now. You don't need to understand the language the person is speaking. So long as the music is premium and world class, the world is, you know, gonna embrace you.
We had the platforms, but the talent at that time, they were good, but they needed some more exposure.
Acceptability of Nigerian music, I believe it started from Nigerians here in Nigeria, Nigerians in diaspora, going to their friends, then from their friends taking it to the clubs.
We started going to foreign events, the Grammys, World Music Awards, BET Awards, and our artists could see, oh, this is how Jay-Z